having trouble believing in God, have some obstacles between you and faith in God, or maybe not you, maybe a relative or a friend or somebody you'd just like to help out. What are those obstacles and can we overcome those obstacles? That's what we're going to do this hour, talk about overcoming obstacles to belief in God, of which we can assume there must be many because lots of people seem to be having trouble believing in God, maybe coming to the conclusion that there is no God or just maybe coming to the conclusion, I don't know and I can't know. 888-318-7884 is our number. If you are that person, we would love to have a chat with you. 888-318-7884. Or if you know that person and you'd like to be helpful in addressing their concerns or helping them overcome their obstacles, again, 888-318-7884. And here to help us do that is Carlo Broussard, the author of Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Carlo is apologist here at Catholic Answers, speaker extraordinaire. It's very nice to have you back again, Carlo. How are you?
Hey, Si, it's great to be back, and I'm doing all right, brother.
And I didn't forget to say your name this time.
That's right.
I didn't forget to say your name, just start having a conversation with you.
You introduced me. Yeah. Thank you.
I know I'm getting better, Carlo. I have certain obstacles to doing my job correctly. One of them is that I do get genuinely excited when you're here because I really am deeply of the notion that faith and reason are compatible in the way that maybe twin siblings are compatible, that there's just no conflict at all between faith and reason, but they can be helpful to one another. And you are one of those people who you vindicate that faith, you know, like you actually have the chops to explain those
things. I'm working on it. I don't know if I have it completely, but I'm working on it, definitely. I tell you what, these guys here at Catholic Answers, they're always whooping me around, man, trying to set me straight, you know. Faith can be vindicated by reason because by employing reason, we can show the reasonable grounds for making an act of faith in God's divine revelation of himself. But when it comes to belief in God as a proposition to affirm or deny, right, that is something that we can affirm by virtue of faith. And the majority of people acknowledge God's existence based on faith. That's a rational approach to belief in God.
Yeah.
But the proposition that God exists is not what we would call an article of faith. It can be known and accepted by faith, but it's not an article of faith as is something like the Trinity or the hypostatic union, Jesus, you know, two natures joined in one divine person, the incarnation that the Son of God, the second person of the Blessed Trinity, became man, the miraculous conception of our Blessed Lord in the womb of the Blessed Virgin Mary. These are things that go beyond reason and thus cannot be arrived at by reason alone. It must be told to us by God. But that God exists is something that can be known by the natural light of human reason. There are a variety of arguments to support that claim, whether it be probable arguments, such as, like, for example, the fine-tuning argument, which looks at, you know, certain the fine-tuning of the initial conditions of the universe and the universal constants, and then reasoning or inferring to the probability, the high probability of there being a supercalculating intellect, right?
Yeah.
That set all of those conditions. But then there are also, in my opinion, metaphysical demonstrative proofs, the premises of which can be reduced to first principles of knowledge, such as the principle of non-contradiction, the principle of sufficient reason, and or principle of causality, etc. So that God exists as something that can be known by the natural light of human reason. The First Vatican Council defined this In the 19th century, I think I'm getting that right. The First Vatican Council defined that
1869.
There
70.
You go. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I wanted to make sure I didn't slip up like I did on the cruise. Right? Remember? When I messed up on some dates.
That is so funny. Weeks ago, you're probably still ruminating over that.
Indeed,
okay. All right.
It keeps me up at night, man. But yeah, so something that that God exists can be known by the natural light of human reason, but as St. Thomas Aquinas would point out in the Summa Theologiae, this is only known by a few who have the skills and the capabilities to go through the intellectual rigor, the rigor of the intellectual arguments, and only a few have the leisure time to do so, right?
Yeah, that's the thing.
And then, of course, many who try to do so end up in a variety of erroneous ideas and erroneous conclusions. So,
right.
So this is why God, in his mercy, revealed to us through supernatural revelation this natural truth that we can know by the natural light of human reason, but God reveals it to us to allow us to come to this knowledge with ease and with more certainty.
So it's okay for me as a Christian, and I really would say this. This is a true statement, I think, about myself. I believe you when you say you can come to know that God exists by the light of reason, but that's not how I did it.
That's okay. And that's okay. Yeah, okay. That's fine. But that it is attainable by the natural light of human reason is a prerequisite for it's something, you know, divine revelation itself is logically presupposed by the existence of God and that he exists. We call this a preamble of faith before, when we're talking about reality itself, before God can reveal himself, he must first exist, right? And this is something that can be known by the natural light of human reason. It's not necessary that God tell us so through a supernatural means.
Again, 888-318-7884, the number we're talking about, overcoming obstacles to belief in God. The lines are filling up, so you might want to dial if you want to get in and chat with Carlo. And it's okay to be challenging if you think you have a proof that there's no God or something like that. You're welcome as well. Atheists, agnostics, religious people, non-religious people, Catholics, non-Catholics, everybody's welcome. 888-318-7884. Let's go to Tim in Monclova, Ohio, listening to EWTN on 89.7 FM. Tim, your question for Carlo Broussard.
Yeah, hi, guys.
Hey,
hi, Tim.
I just wanted to ask, my obstacle right now is I'm having a trouble ciphering the difference between like dissolution and faith. I know like Mother Teresa, she went through a period of time with dissolution, but like for me, with me not having that close relationship or feeling God and knowing him, isn't that faith? Like not knowing is faith, but having that experience, I just kind of having trouble. Like, I want that experience, but I feel like I don't have that. So that's called faith. Like,
okay. So if I could let me just clarify with you, Tim, you want to believe in God, or maybe you do believe in God, but it's difficult because you don't have any felt experience of him. You're not feeling his presence in any way.
I am Catholic. I do believe in God. Right. I don't have that really felt experience. I'm
Fair
trying.
Enough.
I've been going to retreats and things.
Sure.
Of that
well,
nature.
God bless you, Tim. Yeah. Carlo, what do you say to that?
And this is relevant to the topic at hand, Cy, because for many, unlike Tim, there are many who, because they don't feel God's presence in their lives, they don't have any sort of spiritual sensory experience or even psychological or emotional experience. So they conclude from that, well, then God must not be real. And that can serve to be an obstacle to even belief in God, unlike it is for Tim, but for many others out there, it is the case. But I think we can address both in the same way. And so, Tim, I would say having faith, you can have faith whether you experience emotional satisfaction in belief in God or not. So you mentioned in your comment that, well, because I don't have an emotional experience, well, then therefore it is faith. Well, faith can be had whether the emotional experience is there or not, precisely because faith is an act of assenting to that which God has revealed to us and assenting to it and embracing it as true, acknowledging it to be true because God has revealed it. We accept that which God has revealed based upon his testimony. And that testimony is the most reliable testimony of all because God is he who can neither deceive nor be deceived. So that faith is a response to the evidence given to us through the teaching and the teaching of Jesus Christ and his resurrection. And so we make an act of faith. We accept what God has revealed to us based upon his testimony in and through Jesus Christ. Now, that can be accompanied by an emotional experience, or sometimes it won't be accompanied by emotional experience. And this is why we can never use emotional experience as a guiding principle in order to determine or decipher whether I have legitimate faith or not, because faith can be had with or without it. And this is this. I will admit, Tim, that this belongs to God's providential plan and his infinite wisdom, and it is a mystery of how God will give some that emotional experience. And sometimes people don't receive that emotional experience. God is a temporary thing. God gives it at some times. Sometimes he takes it away. And I think there is wisdom in that, because at times God wills to test our faith to see if we're willing to continue believing in him and embracing what he has revealed to us based upon his testimony, whether we have the emotional experience or not. Are we in love with the experience?
Yeah.
Which would seem to be a selfish thing,
yeah.
Or are we in love with him? And so is it about God or is it about me? So I think this is why sometimes God, in his infinite wisdom, will take away that emotional experience in order to test our faith. And we see this throughout Scripture, God testing Abraham and testing saints throughout the history of the church. So what do you think of that, Tim?
I just wanted to expand. I totally agree with you, and that's what I'm doing. I'm, you know, trucking along. I'm not losing faith due to not having that experience, but maybe to possibly have that if he does have it in his will for me. I mean, do you think just doing the groundwork and continuing to have faith and prayer, if he has it in his will, then that'll come about? I guess that's how I look at it, right?
Sure, yes, Tim. I think we can say that in God's plan and his infinite wisdom, when the timing is right, God will bless us with certain experiences of him in the sensory realm, in the emotional realm. But it's something that we can't expect to be experiencing ongoing day in and day out. I mean, even on the natural level, right?
Right.
In a marriage, in the home, and you know, when you're with your spouse.
Love my wife completely and
but
ardently
there's a difference,
at all times.
But there's a difference between love and the experience and the feeling that sort of comes
from love.
That
was in case she's listening.
Love. That's right. So sometimes you have the fuzzy-wuzzy feelings that flow from love, and sometimes you don't. And you're still loving. So I think, Tim, it is reasonable to say that in this relationship with God, we keep trucking forward and exercising the act of faith and believing in him and trusting and having confidence that at some time when God sees it fit, that he'll bless us with temporary goods, such as the emotional and sensory experience of his presence.
But if you're asking in a trusting way, it's okay to ask him for
it. Oh, sure. That's a very good point. I actually thought about that as Tim was talking, and I wanted to say that there's nothing wrong with requesting that from God.
Yeah.
As long as you're requesting it in accordance with his will. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, God, it would be nice to get a little affirmation here, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's
right.
Pretty dark right now, and I'm praying for a little light.
Right.
And so I'm asking for your help here, but in accordance with your will. So if he chooses not to give us that sensory pleasurable experience, right, of mm-hmm. his presence and feeling that consolation, then we trust it's his will and we keep moving forward in faith.
Tim, we will have to leave it there. I hope that was helpful to you. Thanks so much for starting us off with your call today. Our topic this hour, overcoming obstacles to belief in God, whether you have that obstacle in your own life or whether there's someone in your life who you would like to help over such an obstacle, give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Our spring store-wide sale is still on. We've got all kinds of resources, including the new books from Don Eden, Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, and a whole bunch more. Just enter the promo code SPRING. Oh, that'll include Carlo's book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. You get 15% off all of it. Just put in the promo code SPRING19 when you visit shop.catholic.com. SPRING19 at shop.catholic.com for 15% off everything.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
We need KDWTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Second hour, Rose Sweet will be here. We're going to talk about marriage, annulments, divorce, the church's teaching on all of those. And if that touches on your life and you'd like to ask a question, give us a call second hour. This hour, overcoming obstacles to belief in God. Carlo Broussard is our guest, and our next caller is Hunter in Virginia, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Hunter, thanks for downloading the app onto your phone. Your question for Carlo.
Hi, Carlo. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a convert to Catholicism, so okay. I've been learning, trying to do my best to learn as much as I could. I grew up
Amen,
in a secular
brother.
Household. Atheists, etc.
Okay.
Wow.
The doctrine that I seem to be struggling the most with of late is the doctrine of original sin and the fall.
Okay.
Specifically how it relates to evolution. And you know, I'm no expert in paleoanthropology, evolution of the human species, but you know, a survey of modern scholarship seems to suggest that the prevailing theory is that the first humans came about somewhere in Central Africa, maybe a couple hundred thousand years ago or so.
Right.
And that given the gradual nature of evolutionary processes, a lot of paleoanthropologists posit that it's unlikely that the current human population could trace its lineage all the way back to a single pair of humans, like in Adam and Eve,
right.
but rather to a group of early humans.
Sure.
Which, if true, would seem that we're not all physical genetic descendants of Adam and Eve.
Sure.
And so I wanted to know if such a theory would be in conflict with the doctrine of original sin, because from how I read it, it seems entirely consistent with the teaching of the church to say that we, and by we I mean like the current population of humans, don't have to be the physical and genetic descendants of Adam and Eve. But rather that every human soul instantiated after Adam's primordial sin inherited its fallen nature consequentially. So ultimately the question is that plausible, or does it have to be the case that we're all physical genetic descendants of Adam and Eve?
Yeah, I would land in the camp on the latter, that the church does teach that original sin has been transmitted to us, or you know, the stain of original sin has been transmitted to us through the propagation of the human species from Adam and Eve. This is why the church teaches that all of humanity incurs the stain of original sin, because all of humanity was in Adam when he disobeyed God. This is why death comes into human history through the sin of the one man, Adam, as St. Paul writes about in Romans chapter 5, and consequently, through the new one man, the new Adam, Christ, grace is now made manifest to all of humanity. Now, concerning how does that jibe with modern science and the genetic information that, you know, we have within us, and it not being able to come from only two people. There are a multiplicity of theories that scholars, both theologians and philosophers, posit in order to show how the church's teaching on the transmission of original sin, of a fallen human nature coming from our first parents, Adam and Eve, and how that coheres with the modern scientific evidence within the field of genetics. And so I would encourage you to check out two online articles. Those theories go beyond what we can talk about here on the air. And because it's very nuanced, I'm hesitant to even go forward with the explanations, because it can cause a lot of confusion, and I don't have time in order to clarify the nuances. But there are two online articles, Hunter, written by Catholic philosopher Edward Feser, F-E-S-E-R. And the two, it's Modern Biology and Original Sin, Parts 1 and 2. So if you just Google Modern Biology and Original Sin. It'll come up part one and part two. And you can read those articles, Hunter. And Dr. Fazer actually references some other articles on a scholarly level that you can check out as well. Now, as you read these articles, keep in mind, Hunter, that these are simply theories, right, that are proposed for reconciling the divinely revealed truth of original sin and the transmission of original sin through the propagation of the human species and what modern science has given us. So it's not that you have to accept the theory that's being proposed in order to reconcile the two, but it's one theory that could be proposed in order to show how they both cohere. So in no way would we have to deny what God reveals to us concerning original sin coming from Adam and Eve through the propagation of the human species, through the human race, and what modern science gives us. In no way would we have to reject one or the other, but they both can cohere. So I'll leave it at that, Hunter, and I'll leave it up to you. You sound like a very bright individual, man, so God bless you for that. And I'm sure you'll enjoy the couple of articles and the further articles that Dr. Fazer references.
Thanks, Hunter. Thanks very much. As Dr. Stacy Drasenko, scientist and theologian, always reminds us, you got to be careful about overclaiming what science can reveal, too. I mean,
that's right.
It's not just not the current state of science. It's not possible ever for science to tell us who our first parents were.
Correct.
That can never be done.
Yeah, what science is doing is it's restricted on the level of genetics, mm-hmm. right, and what is empirically available to us, but it doesn't consider the higher or deeper metaphysical questions about the nature of the human being and how God interacts with the propagation of the human species and how every human soul is directly created by God but cooperating with human beings and other possible non-rational animals that possibly rational animals may have been interbreeding with in order to account for the genetic makeup that we find today.
Right.
I just gave a little hint
of what
and Dr. a peek yeah. of one of the possible theories that are proposed. But the point being is that science is restricted on the first level of the building, of looking at only what its methods of science allow it to look at.
Right.
And then, of course, you have further higher up in the building metaphysical questions that science just simply can't address.
One of the great things, though, about all that science is, man, you get a sense of the great, awesome power of God.
That's
right.
I mean,
the way God – the more you learn about the way God does things, the more you're like, man, I am a tiny speck.
And then you have to bring in theology here because when you start reading about some of these proposed theories of how to account for all the diversity of the genetic makeup, you also have to take into theology in what was God's plan before the fall?
Yeah.
And how God may possibly have done it if Adam and Eve had not sinned?
Yeah.
And taken into account the condition of the human race after the fall and what's going on there and how God might work with certain things, but given the fallen world, right?
Yeah, right.
So you also have to take into account theology and what God has revealed to us.
Hunter, again, thank you for that question. Overcoming obstacles to God this hour with Carlo Broussard. And we go now to Jeff in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on KHOJ. Jeff, your question for Carlo.
Hello. I've had some discussions with my oldest son who you know, he's still a believer and everything, but he doesn't think that there's any real rational proof that there is a God or that there had to be a God that created everything and put it in motion, that type of thing.
Sure.
I don't know, he's talking about multiverses and, you know, that like the laws of thermodynamics would apply to a closed system, you know, so that wouldn't necessarily mean, you know, that the universe would have at some point reached equilibrium where all the heat, you know,
right.
Transferred and that kind of thing.
Sure.
So I didn't know if you had any, you know, and he was saying, I guess, for mass and energy are interchangeable, I guess, to an extent. And,
okay.
And they're never lost. So I guess the perpetual motion machine kind
sure.
of argument wouldn't work and that kind of thing. So
okay.
I don't know if you had any, you know, either if you could, you know, explain it or had links or.
Okay, fair enough. Jeff, I think the the perpetual motion machine argument actually does work, but I'm in the minority on that. But.
Yeah. So, Jeff, no, this is a great question. So it seems to me that your son is coming at you in conversation with things he's reading or arguments for God's existence that only employ the evidence from modern science, which is – oh, there's the break. There's the music for the break. So, Jeff, please stay on the line, and hopefully we'll wrap up. You know, I'll be able to answer the question on the other side of the break. Si?
I hope you're not cheating, Carlo. I hope you're just not using the break to go
it gives me
to
some
go
time to look
figure
it
out yeah. science. You've got 2.5 minutes to figure out science, Carlo. Then we'll be back. Jeff, right. If you can hang on, that would be just great. We're talking about overcoming obstacles to belief in God today on Catholic Answers Live.
Listen. Have a question? Listen. We've got answers.
Catholic Answers.
I love it.
Live.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old children or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture decays, we have to know how to talk to our children about these issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging onto the shop at Catholic.com.
Hi, this is Philip Rivers, NFL quarterback, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew that she wanted those things, that in them somehow she would find God. Over the years as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Rose Sweet here in the studio with us now. All the fun can begin. Next hour, she'll be here in front of the microphone to talk about annulments, divorce, and in the context of the Catholic teaching on marriage. So hang on if you've got questions or difficulties in that area. That is the hour for you. This hour, Carlo Broussard is here, and we're talking about overcoming obstacles to belief in God, which is also covered in his book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Carlo, we were interrupted by the commercials, we were talking with Jeff in St. Louis about his son's scientifically based objections to God, like go ahead. So I'll let
So Jeff, are you still there, brother?
Yes, I am.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so as I was saying before the break, it sounds like your son has been reading about arguments that employ evidence from modern science to promote the theistic worldview and the conclusion that God exists. And that's a rational approach. And there are some very persuasive arguments. Concerning those types of arguments that employ science, I would recommend two resources for you, okay? So one is by Father Robert Spitzer, the founder of the Magis Center. So if you go to magiscenter.com, magiscenter.com, and check out his book, New Proofs for the Existence of God, And in that book, the first half of the book concerns a few arguments, such as the fine-tuning argument and the Kalam cosmological argument, that employ evidence from contemporary cosmology to support the theistic worldview. And he answers a variety of objections that atheists and agnostics will pose to those arguments from science. Also, my colleague and friend here at Catholic Answers, Trent Horn's book, Answering Atheism, deals with a variety of these arguments that employ evidence from science as well. Now, it's interesting that he would bring to the table only these sorts of arguments and not bring to the table an awareness of other types of arguments, which I mentioned at the outset of the broadcast here, arguments that would be metaphysical demonstrations that God exists, the premises of which in that argument can be reduced to first principles of knowledge. So if you deny the conclusion, you ultimately have to deny the first principles of knowledge that the premises rest on. So the types of arguments such as these, Jeff, would be arguments such as Aquinas's five ways articulated in summary form in the Summa Theologiae. So here's what I'm going to do for you, Jeff. I'll recommend to you a few resources that you can get a hold of that deal with these these types of arguments. So, for example, my book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church, I have a chapter in there where I give a proof very similar to St. Thomas Aquinas's proof in his work on being and essence. And it basically starts with the very existence of things, showing that things of our experience do not exist by nature. They don't have the act of existence by their very essence. They must receive it from something outside themselves, and thus reasoning to an uncaused cause of existence, a reality or a cause that is existence itself, namely God himself, God. And then I argue that there can only be one and deduce the various attributes. So that would be my book, Prepare the Way. Now, I would also recommend, Jeff, a book written by a good friend of mine, former employee here at Catholic Answers, Matt Fradd, and then the co-author Robert Delfino, and the title of their book is Does God Exist? A Socratic Dialogue on the Five Ways of Thomas Aquinas. And so you have sort of a popularized Socratic fun way of approaching the five ways, and then Dr. Delfino gives a more scholarly, articulate exposition of the five ways of St. Thomas Aquinas. And then finally, Jeff, I would mention the book by the philosopher that I mentioned previously, Dr. Edward Faeser, his book, Five Proofs of the Existence of God, where he goes through five metaphysical or philosophical demonstrations and showing that, you know, the argument is valid in form, the premises can be reduced to first principles of knowledge. And so if you deny the conclusion, you're going to end up having to deny first principles of knowledge, which cannot be denied, because in order to deny them, you have to use them. And so you have truly scientific knowledge in the Aristotelian and Thomistic sense. So, Jeff, those are some resources that I would recommend. Yes, it does require some work on your part. And, it's going to require rolling up the sleeves and getting dirty and digging in deep. But I promise you, Jeff, it will be entirely worth it, because it is quite a delight when you contemplate reality and see the beautiful interlocking of all of these conceptions, all these concepts and ideas, and how this whole metaphysical or philosophical framework that reality is, right? And seeing how that points or demonstrates God's existence, it's an intellectual delight. There's much satisfaction, not only for you, Jeff, but if you can articulate it in ways that is persuasive for your son, hopefully your son will come to see that beauty as well.
And Jeff, or anybody else who would like to get those books, Nick wrote them all down, and he'll put them in the show notes. So there's always show notes that go with these shows. Just go to Catholic.com, find this show, and there will be the notes. And I'm looking at the work that Nick did, and he spelled everything right. Beautiful work, Nick. I hope that was helpful to you. Let us go now to John. And I don't have a location for John, but I'm happy he's here. John, your question for Carlo Broussard.
Yes, good evening. I could barely hear the radio because I'm in the car, but I think my question is similar to an earlier caller's.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem with the anthropological history. There are so many
hominid species close to Homo sapiens, like Neanderthals and Cro-Magnon, and you know, we even have some Homo sapiens have Neanderthal genes in them.
Right.
So at what point, my question is, did the soul get entered? Because there's evidence that some of these had spirituality, you know, the way they were buried with flowers or pollens and things like that. So at what point was the soul entered? And, you know, that kind of conflicts with me for things. And if you're talking about Genesis, if death entered the world through sin, why did things die before Adam and Eve?
I mean, John, I'm just going to, because we got two questions now. They're both really, really good questions. But maybe we'll start with the second one, Carlo, because I think it's the easier to dispose of. Death entered the world through sin. That doesn't necessarily mean death in the animal kingdom or the plant kingdom.
That is correct, John. So you might be interested to know that the Catholic Church, especially in its catechism, in I can't remember the exact citation, but in its section on evil, it teaches that even before the fall, things were coming into existence and going out of existence. There was generation and there was corruption. Given the fact that God willed to create a material world in what the Catechism calls a state of journeying to its perfection. And the Church teaches that death entered into human history given the fall, or as a consequence of the fall of Adam and Eve. So the Church does not teach that there was no death prior to the fall within the animal kingdom, within the vegetable kingdom, right, within plants. I mean, animals were munching on plants, and plants are living organisms, so plants were dying. And that fits within the order of the whole and the good of the whole in God's providential plan and how he wills to create a material world. Now, concerning your first question about Neanderthals and Adam and Eve, etc. Once again, I would point you to those articles, online articles, Modern Biology and Original Sin by Dr. Edward Faeser, and you can see how he articulates at least one theory among many that's put forward in order to show how the Church's teaching on original sin and its transmission coheres with the modern scientific narrative. And then just keep in mind too, John, that in no way, you know, or let me just say this, that the alleged problem between the modern narrative, the narrative that modern science gives us, and the creation story in the book of Genesis only arises if you hold to a literalistic interpretation of the creation story in Genesis, such as the literal 6-24-hour period and the succession of days for creation. And so what the Church teaches us is that there are certain primeval truths, historical truths, that the author of Genesis is affirming, but he does so through metaphorical language or figures of speech. Even in its recounting of the fall, there are certain figures of speech and metaphors being used. So we have to be very careful not to read the creation story in Genesis and the fall with the lens of a 21st century modern American who is scientifically inclined, right? Because the author of Genesis was not telling us, you know, how the heavens go. The author of Genesis was not giving us a scientific treatise about how God created the universe and whatnot, but he is giving us theology. He is giving us why God created and how to get to heaven in this relationship that we as humans are supposed to have with God, etc. So those are a few thoughts. What do you think of that, John?
Well, I understand that, and you know, I don't take it literally, and you know, I think God could create any way he wants. I don't have a problem with evolution or with
right.
Anything else. The thing is that, again, I, you know, where was the soul?
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Into history?
That's right. That point slipped my memory. I apologize, John. Well, we don't know exactly at which point in history do we have the first man, the metaphysical man. That is the first animal that becomes a rational animal. That is a body, rational, spiritual, soul composite. That is an animal that no longer has just sensory knowledge, but an animal that has conceptual knowledge. That's what we define a human being as, is a rational animal. We don't have knowledge of exactly when that took place, but we do know philosophically by the natural light of human reason, as St. Thomas Aquinas argues, I think it's in book two of his Summa Contra Gentiles, that the spiritual, rational soul of human beings can only come into existence by a being who has infinite power, namely God. So whenever the first human being, when we're talking metaphysically here, philosophically, right? Not right. just biologically, but metaphysically, the first human being, we know that that rational spiritual soul was created directly by God.
John, thank you very, very much for that. We are talking about overcoming obstacles to belief in God today with Carlo Broussard and more of your calls right after. I want to let you know, though, that Dawn Eden Goldstein's new book that she wrote for Catholic Answers is out. And if you want a book that is both kind of just a great story, very emotionally satisfying, and also deeply spiritually satisfying, you'll love Dawn's book. It's the story of her conversion to the Catholic faith. A Sunday Will Never Be the Same is the name of the book. Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in all kinds of – she's just a great writer. I don't know how else to say it. And she was – well, she's a great writer in part because she made her living in the secular world as a writer, writing about rock musicians and rock producers. She was a rock music industry journalist, and now she puts pen to paper in praise of Jesus Christ and his church. Sunday Will Never Be the Same. You just go to Catholic.com, click on the Sunday Will Never Be the Same banner, and you can learn how you might be able to get a copy for free. Sunday Will Never Be the Same. Visit that banner at Catholic.com.
Hi, this is Trevor Williams from the Pittsburgh Pirates, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Have you ever been so grief-stricken and so heart-sick that you can't see God? You can't see God in the tragedy? You can't see God in that cross? You can't see God in that sick? Why? You're enveloped in that grief. You're enveloped in fear. And God is out the window. You don't see Him standing right next to you.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Pope Francis reminds us that it does not take a specialized degree in theology to become a great evangelist. We're all called to evangelize. Think about the woman at the well. After she encountered Jesus, she immediately went into the city and invited others to meet him as she had. You and I can go out now and do the same. And St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. Get involved today by contacting us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Carlo Broussard is our guest this hour. Next hour, Rose Sweet will be in here. This hour, we're talking about overcoming obstacles to belief in God. And we go now to River in Traverse City, Michigan, watching on YouTube Live. Thanks for joining us on YouTube, River. Your question for Carlo.
Yes. I recently read an article by Jimmy Eck. And, first of all, I'll just give this background. I'm not sure if you're familiar with simulation theory, but simulation theory is basically the theory that humans, as our reality is basically a computer simulation of a reality.
Right.
It Matrix. Sounds like science fiction. Yeah, Matrix, basically.
But Nick Bostrom, you're talking about the British philosopher Nick Bostrom proposed exactly. this idea. Yeah.
Yep, and Jimmy Akin wrote an article about it saying that it doesn't matter whether or not we're in a simulation, Catholicism is still true.
Jimmy would write that, and I bet he backed it up too.
Yeah.
But I keep interrupting you. I apologize. But your question for Carlo?
Totally fine. Yeah. I'm just wondering if there's any other Jimmy Atkins, the only one I can find who has any kind of Catholic insight into this. And I'm so sorry about this question if it's irrelevant, but we were talking about overcoming obstacles to belief in God, and it sounds so stupid, but this is my obstacle to overcoming belief in God right now.
Okay.
Is the simulation theory, and
it doesn't sound stupid at all, River. And I think that Carlo can help you out. Hang on.
Yeah, I have a few thoughts. So first of all, I can't comment on Jimmy's article because I haven't read it yet. So I'm going to have to put that off to the side right now. But Jimmy's a brilliant man, and whatever he says in the article, I would love to read it, and I'll probably steal it from him and answer it with his answers the next time I get the question. But River, no, it is a legitimate question precisely for this reason, Cy. And that is to say, following Aristotle, St. Thomas Aquinas said, everything that's in the mind comes first from the senses. So we start our intellectual enterprise with what we perceive and sense in reality. And from there, we engage in the intellectual processes of abstraction, like abstracting, the form of dogness from Fido the dog. And then we begin reasoning. Well, Fido the dog is a material thing, and material things corrupt and decay, so Fido's going to corrupt and decay, type of thing. That's reasoning. That's a third act of the mind. So, River brings up a very important point here, namely, well, if I'm cut off from the external world and I can't really trust what I'm taking in from the external world, well, then how am I even going to begin reasoning to God's existence? And River, it actually, this sort of line of thinking finds its roots in the 17th century French philosopher René Descartes, who proposed the hypothetical idea of the possibility of a malignant being deceiving us, right? And therefore not being able to trust our senses. So I address this in my book, River, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church, in a particular chapter. And one of the strategies that I coach you through is I give you three ways in which you can overcome this obstacle yourself and possibly help others to overcome the obstacle. So first of all, I articulate how just because something is not logically impossible, that is to say it's logically possible, it doesn't follow that it's plausible, right? So, I would ask you and I ask others, well, what good reasons do you have to think that everything we experience is just a simulation? Right? So just because something might be logically possible, it doesn't mean it's plausible. And so if it's highly implausible, well, then you have good reason to trust what your senses are giving you concerning the external data that you're taking in your lived experience as a human being. The second way that I articulate in how to overcome this obstacle is that, and I don't have time to get into the details here, River, but the only possible way, right, to settle the question is to use the very faculties that are being called into question. So in order to deny that my faculties and the use of my faculties, both intellectually on the spiritual level, such as judgment and reasoning, etc., as well as my sensory faculties, right, which I use for cognition and for knowledge. In order to deny these faculties, you have to actually use them in order to deny them, because you're going to have to think about past experiences, which uses imagination and your sensory faculties. You're actually having to use your intellect in order to try and deny the reality of your intellect. And one of the things that we learn in philosophy, River, is that you know something is true and valid if the only way to deny it, you have to use it, right? Sort of like the principle of non-contradiction and other first principles. So that's the second way I articulate. And then finally, I think it's this sort of objection, River, is self-refuting precisely because of this. Watch this. If it's possible that we're being deceived right now and everything is a simulation, well, then wouldn't it also be true that any evidence we have for this claim could be just another deception? So the very claim itself that we're being deceived, well, if that's possible, well, then any evidence you have to substantiate that claim could be a deception as well. And so it undermines all forms of rational discourse whatsoever. So those are a few thoughts that you can read about in more details, River, in my book, Prepare the Way.
River, I want to give you a chance to respond.
Yeah, basically, I had always assumed for a long time that simulation theory just was not compatible with Catholic doctrine, and that it was not true that we live in a simulation, and that Catholicism was true. Now, reading Jimmy's article, that's coming into question, and basically where I stand is I live in a reality. I see the Bible, and I see that the Bible is historically accurate according to sources. And if the Bible is historically accurate, well, then we can trust the miracles that are in the Bible.
Sure.
And if we can trust the miracles in the Bible, we can trust that God exists based on those miracles in the Bible.
Yep.
My problem is when you introduce the possibility that I can't trust my senses or that the world is a simulation,
yeah.
I have to know that those miracles are not caused by the simulation
right.
or any deception.
Yeah, yeah, and I would agree with you, River, that you're right on target. Once again, I can't comment on Jimmy's article. I don't know what he wrote, but here's one thing to think about. I don't know if Jimmy is saying this or not, but here's a thought that comes to me, River. Even if the simulation theory is true, let's just say hypothetically that everything we experience is a matrix, is a simulation— it doesn't follow from that that God does not exist. And to state it differently, it's possible that God is an objective reality, that God does exist, and we're in a simulation,
yeah.
and everything's a matrix. So I see it as cutting us off from arriving at knowledge that God exists. But the simulation theory in no way proves that God does not exist
yeah.
on a metaphysical, ontological, just highfalutin fancy terminology for reality, right? So we have to distinguish between an epistemological claim,
yeah.
which is the study of how we come to know things, versus a metaphysical claim, which is a claim about the way things really are.
If I may, doesn't some of the proofs for the existence of a rational, immortal soul suggest that and our understanding that a rational, immortal soul can only be created directly by a supreme creator?
Yep.
Doesn't that argue against us being in a simulation? Because
if you sort of take Descartes' methodological doubt approach and saying, well, I know for sure the one thing that exists is me, right?
Right.
Because to deny my existence, I have to first exist, right?
Right.
Type of thing. So he sort of had this groundwork, I exist, and then he offered ways in which to reason to God. But I see your point that.
But my point is that your intellect could not be the product of a simulation because your intellect can only be the product of an immortal soul directly created by God.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
I see what you're saying. So if you start with the reality that the intellect exists, that I have a spiritual soul
right.
that is able to engage in immaterial operations, then I can reason from that God exists. And in fact, this is one of the arguments, this is a argument that we find within even the writings of St. Thomas Aquinas. And many philosophers have articulated and sort of a sixth way
yeah.
of starting with the imperfect knowledge that we have as human beings and reasoning from that to a cause of our spiritual soul. Who is perfect in knowledge and who is existence itself, etc. So I see your point that, you know, trying to avoid this sort of cutoff from the sensory apparatus in order to start with the intellect itself. I would have to give it a little bit more thought, but that seems to be a possible way you could sketch a way out of that.
River, I hope something in there was helpful. Lots of people have denied the existence of my intellect, but that's a different subject for a different day.
I know the feeling, brother.
No, that has never happened in your case. Carlo Broussard, the author of Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Thanks so much for a very, very fine hour.
Well, thank you, Si. It was a great joy, man. I enjoyed it, too.
All right, Rose Sweet coming up next to talk about marriage, annulment, and divorce, and to help you if you've got any questions or problems in that area. Hang on. We'll be right back with Rose Sweet on Catholic Answers Live.